And Suzanne, you want to come up? Good. There were 20-some of us on the trip, and four of us decided to put together this presentation. And Suzanne was lucky enough to get out of the East Coast.
I did. I left Saturday.
to come here and help me with this. How many of you have been to Cuba before? It's a terrific experience. I highly recommend it. We had a wonderful time. It's easy enough to get in. It keeps getting easier all the time to do it legally, especially with groups like Mar Azul Charters and Medic out of Oakland. So the focus of our trip was to look at the public health service that they have in Cuba. If you compare it to a nearby island like Haiti, you see a huge difference. So we were very interested in finding out how they do things there. We have no relationships to disclose. We all went on our own. You can see in your handouts the research we used and our objectives for describing the integrated healthcare system that they have, discussing the strengths of their system, identifying challenges within their system, and then showing what things we'd like to carry across to our own. Sources of comments and insights are Mar Azul Charters, the community engaged research and health equity issues that we learned on the trip, and interviews and site visits that included starting at the doctor-nurse centers within each community and moving up to polyclinics, national institutes, universities, and community organizers. And then Rachel True of Medic, which is in Oakland. A bit about Cuba itself. I kind of think of it as a Galapagos Islands of politics. After the overthrow of the Batista regime that began in 1953 and ended in 1959 with Fidel Castro taking over, it became an isolated communist country in the Caribbean. A trade embargo soon began after that in February of 1962. The U.S. didn't want to work with a communist country, so they partnered more with the Soviet Union for their supplies and trade. And then after the fall of the Soviet communists in the mid-80s, Cuba went into what was called a special period where they got very little in the way of trade, and there was widespread famine and death. Beyond that, they've now have assistance from nearby countries such as Venezuela. They helped fight a war in Angola, so their partners, South Africa, has trade with them. The U.S. is about the only country that doesn't allow foreign tourism. We were met with Germans, Swedes, Canadians all the time. It's definitely a tourist country. It's just the Americans that are not there. It was interesting to see key health indicators. In fact, on one of the newspapers, the headline was infant mortality per 1,000 life births, that Cuba is down to 5 deaths per 1,000 births, and same as Canada, whereas U.S. has 7. Countries like Haiti or Honduras, their neighbors, are much higher. Vaccination coverage, such as measles, 99% in Cuba. Physicians per 10,000 population, 67. It's a country that really values preventative health care. The circle with the arrow on it shows life expectancy, which is very similar to that of the U.S. and other developed countries. The integration in the healthcare system was what we really enjoyed digging into, and we made visits to all these places. It starts with a neighborhood RN physician team that covers about 30 families, and they live in the neighborhood. They don't commute in, they're not paid extremely well, but they are responsible for the health of their community. If they hear a child has a fever, they go to the house and knock on the door. Why is your child sick? They want to know right away if it's dengue or some other transmittable disease. Is there a flu epidemic starting? They get on it right away. Polyclinics are also within neighborhoods, and they offer more services such as rehab, dental, vision, hearing, endocrine. Major hospitals offer more services. They're huge. They're not totally prevalent, but they are available for extensive surgery, CT scans, MRI. Ongoing data collection. They really do their epidemiology well. Everybody keeps charts, pencil and paper, turns it in to the next higher level, gets to the next higher level, and the head screening area will know what's going on in each community right away. Maternity centers can be live-in for a woman who's at risk of an early delivery or has multiple pregnant births, and medical training. That was a really interesting part, because any physician training in Cuba starts with a family practice rotation. You graduate from medical school, then you do your family practice rotation. If you want to specialize from there, that's fine, but everyone starts with family practice, understanding that the family unit and the health of the community comes first. The strengths of the system are that healthcare is written into the Constitution. It's public health law. Everyone has a right to it, and it's the responsibility of the state to pay for it. And that goes along with education as well. It's integrative. Preventive and curative services are offered together. Healthcare activities with economic and social development. You have exercise in the park. You have screenings in the schools. You have everything within your community. Public participation in the health system's development and function. And they do embrace global health cooperation. They cooperate with the World Health Organization and follow all their guidelines. Primary care is comprehensive, and it's where the people live. 80% of healthcare is done at the community level. And it's, again, an integrated approach where that all the specialties come together for the community. Prenatal care, this is a view of one of the maternal homes. People in our group would ask, well, what if the woman doesn't want to go to the maternal home? What if she wants to stay at her house? And that's a different mindset. You have to understand that you're in Cuba, and this is what you're socialized to. This is what everyone in your family before you did. This is what the state is offering you for safe care of yourself and safe delivery of your baby. It wasn't a question to say, oh, I don't want to do this. That's not the expectation. And it was hard for a lot of people from the U.S. to get their heads around that. Obesity is common, along with nutrition-related diseases such as diabetes. The Cuban diet is high in fat and sugar. Food rations are high in sugar, eggs, white rice, and beans. And the director of nutrition is looking at changing the rationed goods. When we'd be on the street walking along, there'd be someone selling ice cream, and there'd be a very long line of people waiting, or churros. They're no different than the rest of us. They like their sweets, and they overindulge the way the rest of us do. This says, imagine achieving food security in times of crisis. Cuba can't raise all its own nutrients. It does a lot of exchange with Venezuela, which is close by. They still, of course, raise tobacco and trade that with other countries. Physical exercise was seen everywhere. We took trips to the local parks, in neighborhoods. Exercise programs range from aerobics to Tai Chi. We would see children out there playing relay races with balls, with running, playing tag. And we'd see senior citizens doing anything from Tai Chi to rap dancing. The rapping grannies were a great highlight of our trip. There is a focus on social determinants, the non-medical, the health services, the accessibility, a horizontal integration, all leading toward better health outcomes. The extreme focus on primary care, preventative medicine, getting at the illness early on. And then social mediators, social cohesion. Income disparities aren't that great. Yes, people who are higher up in the political regime have more benefits, but we didn't see a lot of homeless people in Havana. We didn't go out to rural areas that much, but we learned what we were told. So there may be discrepancies there, and I may be painting a big sunny picture that's not the reality, but this is what we were told. Challenges that the system in Cuba faces are the prevalence of chronic diseases, overweight, obesity, tropical illnesses such as dengue and malaria. While we were there, there was a dengue outbreak in one area, and all the students from the medical school were taken out of classes to go knocking door to door, see if anyone was ill, to turn over sitting water. They spray vigorously for mosquitoes. We'd be walking down a street, and the spraying truck would come by, pouring out smoke and fumes of pesticide, and people would hitch rides on the truck and breathe it all in. But there is the trade embargo, and it's a poor population, it's an aging population, but it is what it is. Cuba's working to meet these challenges at the population level nutrition and physical activity programs. Highly specialized research in tropical illness and HIV/AIDS. They've done a big turnaround in no longer stigmatizing being gay or having HIV/AIDS. Encourage resourcefulness by only industrializing what is truly necessary and working with communities to solve population-specific illnesses such as poverty and seniors, aging. The kinds of lessons for the U.S. that we found were setting overarching health policy goals. How do we want to start it here? Do we want to start at a population preventative level? You might think of how Obamacare is presenting itself with preventative care, the way the Kaiser system does. Let's get everybody in. Not in the emergency room, but in clinics, and have access to care that way. Integrate public health and clinical medicine. Anything clinical gets put into reports. The epidemiology is focused on, and they look at what they can do with larger groups. Provide universal access at little to no cost. Evaluate the process and outcomes regularly and rigorously. Use integrated teaching in all health professions. The way that Cuba makes everyone go through family health before they move on to a specialty or stay in family health as a physician, rather than just going straight into radiology or whatever the, anyway. And draw more students from disadvantaged communities. There is a program near Havana where we met with U.S. students who had been chosen to study in Cuba. Their tuition and housing is paid for if they're under 29, and they will agree when they're done with their studies to return to an underserved area. So we've got a fellow from Oakland who is going over there. He's learning Spanish. He's taking all his 6 years of medical school in Spanish. And when he's done, he plans to return to Oakland to serve the community there. And that way his medical care is, medical education is paid for. That's quick and beyond our time. Suzanne, do you want to add anything?
No, let's just see if there are questions.
Please, questions.
Diane Applebaum, I think, is still in the audience, and she
Major Doma.
I'm the U.S. Director of Medic, and thank you very much. We have a booth at 2719 booth, and we're not all about Medic programs, but we do have a people-to-people license, and I think you went on a research.
Really?
Actually, in this, with affordable, with the Affordable Care Act coming up, maybe, we think there's a lot to learn from Cuba. And whether it be on one of the large levels of the principles of that plot or in a small community, just adapting certain principles to the Cuban health system, we think it's a really valuable model for people to see. So if you're interested, contact Medic.
So we have just a couple minutes.
Please.
If you were to go back a second time, is there anything that you'd like to see more of or anything that you missed?
We didn't see much of the countryside. We had one fascinating lecture from people who had been part of the revolution back in the early 60s who went out into the countryside because they had teachers and doctors cover the country. They thought of education and healthcare as primary. And it would have been very nice for us to have seen the countryside and how that is set up differently.
It's very frustrating. It's one of those things that, that always happens to you. You don't want to not do anything that you did. You only had 1 week, and you want to do all these other things. So it wasn't. But we all felt that it would have been terrific to see one of the rural sites and one of the rural clinics. We never felt as if we were being anything was being held back from us. We could talk about anything. We could ask any question. Mary did mention we saw what we were shown, and we heard only what we were told, but we could talk to anybody on the street. It wasn't as if we were engineered to only talk to certain people. They use a lot of their local resources, and they don't spend a lot of money. I think this is what the sense of that upscaling to industry, but to doing things more at the micro local level. And they've really been pushed to be resourceful. That necessity is the mother of invention. It plays out in Cuba over and over. They've developed quite a robust pharmaceutical industry, actually, because they can't buy the drugs on the market that we would sell them if we were selling to them and trading with them. So it's at multiple levels, it's a huge challenge for them.
So they focus on drugs that are specific to the problems they're having, dengue, HIV, other infectious diseases. They don't spend research dollars on, well, maybe this will turn into something. They really have to focus on where the money, how and how this money is spent. One more?
So thank you for the presentation. I actually have worked alongside some of the Cuban My question is actually about sort of the perception of their own system, but also our U.S. system. Did you get any insights into what people really thought of their system and if they were getting it, or what they thought about the American system, especially the, you know, the whole health reform debate?
I didn't get the impression that they were that informed about what's going on in the U.S. Computers aren't everywhere. You know, you don't have newspapers and magazines to tell different stories.
In fact, at the session that just preceded this one, some of the presenters who have been very involved in the people-to-people and understanding and exchanges with Cuba said that they were in Cuba, when Obama was signing the Affordable Care Act, and the local folks couldn't understand what the big hoopla was among these several Americans, because it was sort of, really?
You're kidding me.
I think they're very, my sense, this is not empirical study, but my sense is that they're very proud of their system.
Very.
I mean, once it becomes your system, in a way, maybe take it for granted. Of course, this is what we do, because, of course, everybody has access to a doctor and a nurse, because why wouldn't you? If you grow up with it, you sort of expect it, I think. But you mentioned your comment earlier. I think when community health centers first started in the 60s, one of the stories we used to hear is the doctors and the nurses are sweeping the floors and doing everything, because it was that egalitarian push in the mid-1960s, and we've changed.
So I want to thank
you.